Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today. This afternoon, I'll be telling a story about below-ground nitrogen cycling in Albertan boreal systems, and I will show you how I use net nitrogen mineralization as one indicator of below-ground ecosystem health to help oil sands companies with the Rhetland reclamation projects.
That's better.
Well, I'll just go with it. It'll come on eventually. So to start out, I just want to take you where I work. I work in the boreal region of Alberta, Canada. I've been doing work here now with my group for the better part of the last 6 years. And if you fly over this region in a helicopter, here's what the landscape looks like from above. It's a vast landscape with peatland landforms that are interconnected with upland systems. Now, globally, these peatlands are important because they are net carbon sinks. They make peat, and they've been doing this for about the last 12,000 years in the boreal regions, ever since the last glacial period. Now, right now, it's estimated globally that peatlands currently contain about 33% of the world's total organic soil carbon. Now, they also contain about 9 to 16% of the world's total organic soil nitrogen. And it's the cycling of this nitrogen in boreal peatlands that I am most interested in. So what I'm going to talk about today is nitrogen mineralization. And simply defined, nitrogen mineralization is a below-ground nitrogen cycling process where microbes in peat break down and transform soil organic matter into ammonium nitrate. And over the last 6 years, our research group has we've attempted to capture the entire range of nitrogen mineralization rates in Alberta's main peatland types. And these three generalized peatland types are rich fens, poor fens, and bogs. And just to show you some of the systems where we have measured mineralization, I'm going to start with the rich fens. In this first example, this is an extreme rich fen. These systems are less common across the Albertan landscape. They are true moss dominated. They have abundant sedge populations. They're characterized by having a very high pH, up to about 9. Also, they're characterized by having high electroconductivities of pore water. Electroconductivity is simply a measure of the charge in water. It generalizes the ion content. So EC ranges in extreme rich fens can be as high as 400 microsiemens. Now, the more common type of rich fen found in Alberta are moderate rich fens. Moderate rich fens as well are true moss dominated. They also have abundant sedge cover. They have lower pHs that are sort of, they hover around neutral. And they additionally have reduced EC ranges that are lower than the extreme rich fens. Now, the next major fen type are poor fens. Structurally, poor fens are different in that they are sphagnum moss dominated. And here in this photo, you have a good picture of sphagnum to scale if you use that dime for a reference. Now, poor fens have a lower pH, about 4 to 5.5, and they have much lower ECs. They are rather oligotrophic systems. And lastly, our group has measured mineralization in bogs. Bogs also, they are dominated actually at an overstory by black spruce trees. They too are sphagnum moss dominated. They have low pHs. They are oligotrophic systems. Our group has measured mineralization in old bogs, which is what you see here in the photo. We have also measured mineralization in middle-aged bogs, young bogs, and even in burn bogs. So we've tried to capture the whole range of mineralization variants across bog landforms. And in this photo of the beige stuff, this is burned sphagnum moss. So you can see a big difference there. So just to show you how mineralization works in a peatland, what happens is microbes in peat, they break down soil organic matter first into dissolved organic nitrogen, or DON. Now once you have a buildup of a DON pool, microbes will further reduce that DON down first into ammonium in a process called ammonification. Once you have ammonium, in the presence of oxygen, another suite of microbes can transform that ammonium into nitrate in a process called nitrification. Now today, I'll be talking about net nitrogen mineralization, which is different than gross mineralization. Net nitrogen mineralization refers to the total amount of plant-available ammonium and nitrate that plants theoretically are able to use after microbes have immobilized their fill. So in the boreal forest, the major factors that control mineralization, the big ones are substrate quality, temperature, aeration status, and to a lesser degree, pH. And in general, because wetlands are relatively anoxic, net nitrification rates are low. And historically, net nitrogen mineralization has been shown to be dominated by the ammonification step of the reaction. So here we have net nitrogen mineralization rates for Alberta, Canada, and these are contemporary rates. This graph actually represents about the last 6 years of my life. So on the y-axis, you have net nitrogen mineralization, and the rate is in kilograms per hectare per year. And on the x-axis, you have the three major peatland site types. The dark bars are the rich fens, the light gray bars are the poor fens, and the little sliver of a bar is for bogs. Now, in general, what we have found is that mineralization in rich fens, those rates are quite high, about 40 kilograms per hectare per year. And then as systems become more sphagnum-dominated, mineralization rates subsequently decrease, and they are definitely the lowest in bog-type landforms. Just keep in mind this high number. Mineralization rates in rich fens are quite high, and the rates are quite variable. Now, moving on to nitrification rates, here we see that across all of Alberta's main peatland site types, nitrification rates are low. Rates are generally less than 1 kilogram per hectare per year. So if you just look at the difference, and if you take an ammonification to nitrification ratio for rich fens, that ratio is about 80 to 1. So just keep this in mind. And the general conclusions are, for Alberta, net nitrogen mineralization rates in rich fens are quite high, and then rates go down for sphagnum-dominated systems. And in general, rates in rich fens are highly variable. And overall, net nitrification rates are very low for all of Alberta's landforms that we have monitored thus far. Okay, so now I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and I'm going to talk about oil. So most people don't realize, but there's a lot of oil in Canada. There's more oil in Canada than all of the Middle East. And most of Canada's oil is localized to the province of Alberta, specifically in the Athabasca oil sands region. Now, unfortunately, the Athabasca oil sands region also directly overlaps with Alberta's peatland landforms. And the main type of oil that is found throughout this region is oil sand. And oil sand is a low-grade hydrocarbon that is intermixed with sandy substrates that underlie peatland landforms. And to access this this material, what has to happen is oil companies, once it's found, they have to essentially scrape the landscape bare to expose this oil sand. And it transforms the landscape from something that looks like this into something that looks like this. This is an open pit mine. And these oil sands deposits can often go down about 70 meters deep. So once all the oil sand has been extracted and taken from these pit mines, and they wash the oil out, they have to put the clean sand somewhere else. And they deposit this clean sand, or I'm not going to say clean sand, it's oil removed sand. They put that into what they call in pits. And these look like white sandy beaches. Now, to put the size of these in pits in scale, I have this photo that first shows two of Alberta's main oil companies, Suncor in the foreground and Syncrude in the background. So just keep in mind what these two circles encompass. And I'm going to scale out. And these are those circles at a different scale. Now, what you see in the beige, these are the in pits. And to put the size of these in pits in perspective, this is Manhattan Island. And if you're familiar, this is Central Park. So these in pits are quite large, and these are only two of the oil companies. There are five of them in Alberta right now. So scaling out even further, this is where the open pit mine sites are localized in the province, and here is the state of Rhode Island. So there's a lot of disturbed ground out there, and I don't want to make these oil sands companies out to be the bad guy, because they definitely are not. They are going to great lengths to try to reclaim the landscape. And for Syncrude Canada Limited, the company that funds our research, this is their goal. It is their long-term vision to create a productive landscape equivalent to that of the pre-disturbance landscape. Okay, so now I'm going to introduce Sandhill Fen. And this is Syncrude's flagship experimental wetland. It is their flagship project to try and reclaim a fen on top of these large in-pit areas. So just to show you a picture of what Sandhill was before, Sandhill was placed on top of an in-pit that was right on Syncrude's front door, and this is what the site looks like now in year two. So Sandhill Fen is quite large. The wetland portion is about 17 hectares. It's now 3 years old. It's in its third year, and to build this site, it costs about $50 million. So just to show what the site looks like as of this past summer, this is year three. So in general, there are parts of this reclaimed fen that are it looks really good. So, you know, our first big question was, is it even possible to reclaim a wetland on top of these in-pits? And after 3 years, it seems that the answer is, in the short term, maybe. So our questions have evolved. And now I have to ask, well, if we can reclaim on these in-pits, how do we know that this reclaimed system is actually functioning like a characteristic Albertan wetland? And how do we know that this wetland may be on actually trajectory to becoming a characteristic Albertan wetland? So to find this out, what we have done is we have selected several performance indicators, or things that we call indicators of success. And these indicators can be structural indicators, chemical indicators, or functional indicators. So an example of structural indicators would be, are the right plants growing there? And are they happy? For chemical indicators, this could be, are the right nutrient concentrations dissolved in the water at the right concentrations? For functional indicators, questions here could be, are the right microbes there? And are those microbes doing the jobs that they're supposed to be doing? Are reactions going in the right directions? Are reactions going forward at the proper rates? So what we have done is we have selected seven benchmark wetlands around the Athabasca oil sands region, and we monitor, well, we have four rich fens that we have selected, we have two poor fens, and we have one bog, and we monitor structural, chemical, and functional attributes of these seven systems, and we compare what we see at the benchmarks to what we see at Sandhill. So to show you how we do this, in this example here, we have pore water pH of our seven benchmarks. Now the gray bars represent the rich fens. We have three moderate rich fens and one extreme rich fen, which is the gray hatched bar, and the white hatched bars are our sphagnum-dominated systems. And overall, you can see in the extreme rich fen, that system has high pH. It's a high pH system. And then as you get to more sphagnum-dominated systems, the pH goes down. Now, the question is, where is Sandhill going to fall in this graph? And at the beginning of the experiment, we had no idea what the pH of this reclaimed system would be. So if you look at Sandhill, what we have found is that the pore water pH is very similar to the extreme rich fen. And overall, the range is pretty close to the moderate rich fens as well. So this is very encouraging. So now I'm going to move on and show you what's happening, what's the nitrogen cycling side of the story at Sandhill. And just a reminder, nitrogen mineralization, the process that I measure, it's a process where microbes and peat break down soil organic matter into plant-available ammonium and nitrate. Okay. So here in this figure, we have nitrogen mineralization rates for our benchmarks. And as you can see, mineralization rates in the rich fens, they are higher than what we see in the sphagnum-dominated systems. In addition, they're more variable. So the big question now is, where is Sandhill going to fall? And again, we didn't know exactly where Sandhill would fall on this graph at the beginning, at the onset of this experiment. So Sandhill falls right here. So again, This is encouraging as well. It seems that mineralization rates at Sandhill Fen are very similar to several of our benchmarks. If you want to look at the ones that it's most similar to, Sandhill is most similar to the extreme rich fen, one of our moderate rich fens, and then another poor fen that we monitor. And I will say that this poor fen in particular, it exhibits mineralization rates at the upper end of what you see in the literature. So this is a very good sign. Now moving on to nitrification, and just recall, nitrification rates overall in Alberta historically have been shown to be low. So if you look at nitrification at our benchmark sites, what we see is nitrification rates, as expected, hover around zero. Okay, now what do we find for Sandhill? So here, when we first saw this, this was our kind of uh-oh moment. This is our this is a red flag. So when we saw this, we kind of had to step back and we had to ask, what is going on here? Or why are we seeing nitrification rates at Sandhill? Why are they so high? And fortunately, the answer to this question, it's fairly obvious. So Sandhill Fen is drier than what we initially thought it would be. And you can see this clearly here in this picture. So the dry plots, they are more grass covered, and you can see that green band, that's where all the water is. So when we randomly laid out our plots across this site at the onset of the experiment, some of our plots fell in the dry areas, some of our plots fell in the wet areas. So in the dry areas, clearly the soil is going to be aerobic. Now if you plot nitrification rates for just the dry plots, here is what you find. So it seems that the high nitrification values that we see are coming just from our dry plots. Whereas if you plot nitrification for the wet areas, nitrification rates are driven down substantially. And Mr. Tukey says that in the wet areas at Sandhill, nitrification rates are right on par with our benchmark. So again, this is very encouraging. So nitrogen cycling conclusions, overall in the wet plots at Sandhill Fen, inorganic nitrogen production processes, they're moving forward at ideal rates and they're going in the right directions. And the rates are right on par with our benchmark sites. However, in the dry areas at Sandhill, we see a lot of nitrification going on. And in addition to that, those aerobic soils are allowing wetland undesirables to colonize. So we have grasses that are starting to outcompete the sedges that we want there. And it's a whole cascade of things that we would not like to see, but we are capturing those changes. So overall, for wetland recommendations that we can make to our funders, is that it's just really important in these systems that you've got to keep the soil water saturated. And if you can keep the soil moist, it seems that in terms of nitrogen cycling, that life does find a way. So, so far, I've painted a rather rosy picture of what's happening at this site after 3 years. And, you know, just visually, here you have Sandhill on the right and then one of our benchmark sites on the left, and it looks almost identical to some of the peatlands in the rest of Alberta. But not everything is going as well as we would hope. And I just want to point out some of these things to highlight them. I'm going to take a step back. So this again is Sandhill Fen before it was planted. And remember, this site was initiated on top of old tailing sand. And this sand, it still contains some residual chemicals that were used in the oil extraction. And one of those chemicals is sodium hydroxide. And to prevent upward leaching of these salts, what the engineers did is they laid down a clay cap and they then laid stockpiled peat on top of that, and all the plantings were done on top of the stockpiled peat. And this clay cap is supposed to sort of reduce the upward leaching rates of these salts, or at least slow them down. And what we have found, if you look at the reduced EC values, electroconductivity values of our benchmark sites, EC in the moderate rich fen, the sphagnum-dominated systems are low. Keep in mind there's a break on the y-axis. So in the extreme rich fen, EC is high at about 400. So if you plot the EC of Sandhill for 2013, what we found is that it was right on par with that extreme rich fen. However, in this past year, the mean EC in that fen has increased a great deal. And the EC values at Sandhill are about 200 times what we see at some of our benchmarks. And these high salt levels are also manifesting in the soil as well. So this is sodium content in peat at our benchmarks. And if you look at Sandhill Fen for 2013, 2 years ago, here was the salt concentrations in peat. Now this past year, these are the sodium concentrations now. So the big question is, will these high salinity and sodium levels at Sandhill start to affect the functionality of this system? And will it happen in the next couple years, or will we start seeing things happen in the next decade? And those are questions that we'll find out with time. So I will leave you with that, and I will, time permitting, be happy to answer some questions.